A big thanks to 323 Sports for supporting the show. The guys with 323 Sports are a team dealer providing uniforms, gear, equipment, and more to schools and colleges across the country. I've used them on multiple occasions, and their customer service and low prices are second to none. To find out more, visit 323sports.com, or you can reach out directly to a rep at sales@323sports.com. They'll be sure to do it right for your sports program. I want to welcome to the podcast head coach for the Grand Canyon University women's basketball team, Coach Molly Miller. Coach, great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks. I missed some talking hoops. We're in recruiting mode, so this is a good little break for me.
Yeah, change of pace in this wild time right now, the time of year that we're recording, right in the middle of all the transfer portal stuff, and then it doesn't slow down with recruiting the high school players. So I felt like basketball used to be like more 9-month, 10-month type of stuff, and it feels like it's turned into 12-month with no breaks.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever felt that shortened period, but you know, when you feel like you have some off time, camps are around the corner and summer recruiting, right. But you know, it's a fun grind. It's a grind, but I definitely think it keeps you young. So there's a good spinoff benefit.
Yeah, that's true. So Coach is finishing her third season there at GCU. Prior to that, 6 years at Drury University, and already 431 seasons in her young head coaching career and second highest winning percentage in Division I. Today, we're talking defense, and in particular, some pressured defense. Coach, can you describe, in your words, your style of defense?
Organized chaos, I guess. We kind of know what we're doing, but if it looks a little chaotic out there, that's probably the right mentality that we have. There's a lot of... not tons of rules, but you know, we trap a lot, but there's a little bit of strategy when we do that, how we do that, why we do that, where we go when we do that. So it's something that's kind of evolved from my playing days. I love that side of the ball because if you were to look at my stature, I was a little 5'6" point guard, and that's probably generous, but I was an ankle biter. So my dad loved that side of the ball, and he was my coach growing up. So just learned to love defense and have evolved it through my philosophies and my experience as a coach. And I really do kind of believe it gives us an edge before teams even step out on the court, because when they're preparing during film, you can see it, and it might be a little intimidating sometimes. And, you know, coaches even prepare for that during scout. They're going to come at you. So that's kind of living in your head before the tip. So I think it's a great, fun style to watch, to play, to coach. So I've really enjoyed teaching defense. And so I'm glad we're hitting on that topic today.
A lot of those things, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions connected to those. So let me start with this, though, because we were just talking about recruiting. Do you recruit to the system? How important is that component to it? And as you're recruiting the players, what are the most important attributes that you're looking for?
Yeah, it's a big piece to make sure that we have a core that can play some defense, and then we'll fill in holes for any voids that we have, whether that be, you know, shooting or offensive capabilities. But for the most part, you've got to be, if you're not kind of that big, long, tall stature, you've got to be scrappy, because we'll get forced switches, we'll be able to rotate, and then you might be on a big as a guard, or you might be on a guard as a big. So just being willing and able, bought into the system, I think is huge. But when we're recruiting the athlete, you kind of have to be positionless. And even technically, if you don't pass the positionless eye test, you've got to be able to scrap and fight and have a motor and have energy and really buy into that side of the ball, which is important, which we look for, obviously, in recruiting, is just that high energy motor that can kind of go. And because that's what our defense is, we're speeding teams up. So I've always really enjoyed watching that side of the ball too in recruiting. It's probably a little bit opposite. So are they taking breaks on defense, or are they still engaged and active? So I watch that side of the ball a lot when we're recruiting, and hopefully there's some offensive pieces that can fit. I think now at Grand Canyon, it's a little bit more sophisticated at this level, where we're trying to find kids that can do both side of the ball really well, but hopefully defensively they can always fit into the system, or I know where I can place them in the system.
Before we talk technique and skill development. I've found at the college level, especially when they make that jump from high school to college, maybe the biggest hurdle, just kind of developing the defensive mindset and just them understanding like how hard they have to work to actually play at the level that you want them to play at. How do you help players understand that part of it?
You got to communicate with them right off the bat that this is not going to be easy, but it's going to be very rewarding. I think one of the appeals to this type is everyone's playing in situational offense because we're playing a lot in the open court. So who knows who's going to get that steal on a turn and who's going to end up in the 2-on-1 or the 3-on-2. So everyone benefits from this style of defense because you're not really walking it down on a 5-on-5 half court saying go to A, B, C. So there's a lot of opportunities as an offensive player because of the defense, if that makes sense. So I think just getting kids to understand that it's going to be, a game where you're going to have a lot of opportunities offensively because of the team system. So you have to buy into the team. If we have four players out there doing their job, but one's not, it doesn't work. And you don't want to be that one player that's kind of the outlier that lets their man catch or doesn't go on a rotation or isn't finishing the play with a block out. So it kind of inherently makes this kind of team approach to the game. So that translates to the offensive end as well. So it's hard work, but it pays off. You know, when I first got the job, we've been top 5 in the country ever since in steals and top 10 in turnovers forced. So I think they're like, wow, this is working and it's paying off and we're seeing the success. So when you can kind of speak to that success to these recruits too in real time, is it works if you buy in. I had a kid that I recruited at Drury for her offensive game, and she'll laugh at this a little bit. She just got drafted by the Dallas Wings. She was the 31st draft pick. Shout out to Paige Robinson. But she could not guard the door when I recruited her. And she was willing and able, though. She was long. She was 5'10". She learned angles. She understood kind of the assignment, if you will. And she became a really good defender for us. But it's because of that work ethic, that dedication, that buy-in. She had all the offensive tools. But to plug her in the system without being known for her defensive capability, but she had a lot of success and she kind of became a two-way player. So, and now she's a WNBA draft pick. So I think just that mentality you have to share of it will pay off, but it's going to be a lot of hard work and something different probably than you've been taught in the past. But I think that's where we can elevate players' games even more is the defensive side of the ball. You know, a lot of times they get here and player development in college is maybe looked at on the offensive side, but you can really kind of increase that level and hit that ceiling and go above that ceiling if you're focusing on the defensive side of the ball, which I really enjoy in terms of player development.
A Quick Timeout podcast is presented by Dr. Dish Basketball. Dr. Dish machines are the most advanced shooting machines on the market. If you haven't already, join top programs like the Miami Heat, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Duke Blue Devils, and countless others and upgrade to Dr. Dish Basketball. And now, save an extra $300 on select models when you mention Quick Timeout Podcast. To find out more, visit drdishbasketball.com.
Hey coaches, we know you're invested in the next generation of athletes, so why not give them the star treatment this season with Game Changer? Introducing Game Changer, a free app that provides you with data to make strategic decisions and to deliver memorable moments to your team and its fans. Keep parents, friends, and supporters engaged like never before. With Game Changer's free live streaming, fans can catch every jump shot, every steal, every victory from the palm of their hand, no matter where they're at. And with real-time scorekeeping and detailed star tracking, fans get live score updates while you get stats for your team that can build all season long. Post-game, you and your staff can review full game footage while your athletes get automatically generated highlight clips of every scoring play, assist, rebound, steal, and block. Engage your players, empower your coaching decisions, and give the thrill of watching every play unfold in real time this season. Download Game Changer now on iOS or Android. Game Changer equips your team with the tools they need to succeed. Download it today and make this season one for the books. Game Changer. Stream, score, connect.
So let me go ahead and start asking you some breakdown and how to improve this. I attempted to organize this so it may be out of order in what you teach to them. I'm guessing it starts with on ball. Is that right? Or do you start somewhere else?
No, it is on ball defense.
Okay. And so is there anything unique or different in how you teach it?
through the rest of this podcast, you're probably going to hear some terminology that is unique. And I've come up with some words that have just stuck, I guess, over time. One thing we do with our dig hand on ball is deny the crossover. And I call our dig hand kind of a measuring stick, because you're literally measuring up to the offense and you want that measuring stick to be extended. So you're really causing a little bit of pressure, but you're also extending a measuring stick, so one step doesn't get you beat. So it's applied pressure, but you're still keeping a healthy distance from the offensive player, so there's no blow bys. So the fastest move in basketball is the crossover. So that's what we're trying to deny with that dig hand. So you have your palm towards the ball, your dig hand's kind of in there, hassling them right kind of in between their knees. You're in a stance. The other hand is really used for kind of mirroring the basketball, trying to get a deflection for a potential pass. So we just do zigzags, and I call it block the ball. We're not stealing it. We're not reaching. You just kind of, you got your dig hand out, you block the ball, you grab it with two, you give it to your partner. The partner will zig, block the ball, grab it with two, give it to your partner. The other partner will zag, and you'll just do zigzags down the floor with that technique. We do that almost every day, just on ball technique. And then we kind of layer it. So we'll do dig hand steals, then we'll do chest stops. So let's say they don't cross over because you're denying the crossover with your dig hand. They've got to do a spin or a behind the back. So we'll zig and zag again, but you got to turn them. So you've got to get your chest ahead of the ball, around the ball, get a chest stop. And then sometimes where there's contact, we have a terminology. It's called Mickey Mouse. So if you get a chest stop on that zigzag and there's some contact being made, throw your hands essentially up by your ears, and it looks like Mickey Mouse when you're putting your hands by your ears. You're essentially telling the officials, like, this isn't me. I'm not making the contact. Don't call a foul, but I'm still moving my feet and getting my chest around to get that change of direction. And we say, we go on so many turns, we say two dribble max. So I want you to oversell. After that second dribble, I want you to make them change direction. They shouldn't be able to cross over, but if they kind of get tight and in your space and there's a little bit of physicality and contact, keep on turning them with your chest, get your chest and your feet around, and kind of Mickey, throw your hand. So that's a little bit of the on-ball defensive tactic. We work on angles a lot. We work on turns a lot. We work on pressure, but smart pressure. You know, you want to know your speed comparatively to the offensive player and judge that based on how tight you can get. And some people can get tighter than others, but we work on that with kids, and we do it often and a lot.
Just to be clear, so you're wanting every two dribbles for them to chest Mickey and then go the other direction?
Yeah, in the half court. Now on the zigzags, we'll let them go, you know, cone to cone, and that's kind of spread out. So they might get four dribbles in before they're getting to the cone, and we're making that conscious effort to turn them just to work on technique with the dig hand. So we'll get a few dig hand dribbles in there. We'll get our chest around, make them turn Mickey if there's a lot of contact, and then sprint back to get our head. They always say, get your head on the ball. I tell them, get your head ahead of the ball, because we really want to if your head's on the ball, they can go the same direction however long they want. But if you get your head ahead of the ball, then you're ahead of them, and they're going to either run into you and maybe get a charge, or they have to change direction.
I was supposed to ask you, a couple people told me pool noodles.
Yeah. So a little trick of the trade, we'll have some ready. If you don't extend your measuring stick, a good little trick is to like put that pool noodle, use some athletic tape and tape it there. A good trick is to tape it at the elbow so they can't bend it. And then just use that pool noodle as kind of a guide how to, you know, use the measuring stick technique. And it's worked well when kids want to have these alligator arms and guard like this. If you have a pool noodle stuck to your arm, you can't do anything but extend your measuring stick. So that's a little trick we use sometimes. They get a kick out of it.
I love it. Can you explain the cue, the pop back, and how you all use that?
Yeah, I've never really liked the term drop step. I think if you drop step, it just kind of opens up a free path for your defense. So we do pop backs, and really your 10 toes are still facing the ball, but you just, if you're feeling too close, or you can feel your measuring stick getting tight instead of extended, all you have to do is literally pop back. So, you know, we're hassling the ball. All I have to yell is a pop back. And they know just to create some space by just popping back. They don't drop step. They don't open up. they just pop back. So we use that technique, kind of pushing off on the balls of our feet and just having that extension all the time. And if they don't have that extension, you'll hear me on the side, pop back, pop back, pop back. They know what that technique looks like. And we do skinnies all the time. A skinny is kind of a slither of the drill in just a part. So if we're struggling with kind of that distance and the time and space needed to control that ball handler, we'll just do a lot of drills on popping back, popping back, popping back. Then we'll go back to the zigzags and they should have the pop back down by that time. We just did a skinny. We just did a small portion of the drill. And hopefully then the bigger drill will look better because we focused on a small part that we were struggling with.
How do you get your players to play with that kind of aggressiveness, especially on the ball without fouling?
If you don't play with that kind of aggressiveness and assertiveness, then you're the outlier in our program. You never want to be the outlier in anything. You know, you don't want to be on that island by yourself, you know, not kind of doing what the team's doing and for the cause. So it's really unique how just naturally kids will get pulled into the system because one, they see the success, but two, they see everyone's doing it. And that's, you know, the model behavior that we're displaying is this is how we play. This is the brand. So it's not really a question of like, do you have to play hard in the system? Well, to succeed in the system, you have to play kind of with a motor. But we foul a little bit here and there. We try to be mindful of foul count and when to maybe be cognizant of that and not be less aggressive, but less handsy, maybe pop back a little bit more. Maybe it's a measuring stick plus 2 inches there. And then the Mickey is so important because we're just trying to, we throw hands, but we keep our feet moving. I think you'll find if you do these drills and you tell them the Mickey, their feet might stop moving. Well, we'll do a skinny of that sometimes too. Just continue to get around. I'll yell from the sidelines, get around, get your chest around and Mickey at the same time. So it's just practice, practice, practice. I think the unique thing that a lot of coaches who have heard my clinics or seen my clinics or heard my podcasts has said, you really practice the ways you're getting steals in the game. It's not just a drill. Like this is really every way you can get a steal in our system, starting from on ball and beyond. But we still want to be aggressive. So I'm not going to worry about a foul or two here or there, but we got to be smart aggressive sometimes. And we try to teach that game within the game as well.
Is that one of the benefits of playing? You alluded to playing more players. Everybody says develop a deep bench. Hardly anybody actually does it. I think this last year you had 13 out of 14 average 10 or more, and nobody averaged over 29 minutes a game. When you have that many, that's a lot more fouls to play with, I'm guessing.
Yeah, for sure. You can rely on a deep bench, not only for, you know, longevity of your cardio purposes, but in the foul count, you know, we got to be able to have someone come in and step up if we have foul trouble. That's something that's intentional in our system. We've always played kind of with the deep bench. We've always played freshmen. I think that's something that you got to come into the system ready to play and be willing to learn the system quick because you're going to get your opportunity. You know, it's not always the same opportunity as others, but you're going to get your opportunity with how we play.
All right. So do you go one-on-one to two, or do you add three or four or five? What's the kind of progression there for teaching this style?
Yeah, we do. We'll do just one-on-one zigzags, and then we'll add, I call it the four-person turn drill. So we're adding another one that's kind of escorting up the court with the ball handler, and they'll do kind of a zig and a zag and then turn on the sideline. So then it's kind of that mentality of we're going to get ahead of the ball, turn the ball, and the next person has to be able to rotate. Then we'll add a third to where there's going to be a trap, and then the third person in the backcourt comes and rotates one pass up. So then we'll add a fourth and do that too. We kind of have a saying, one goes, we all go. So you're always obviously in the full court, you're going to rotate up the line, really a kind of a level up towards the ball. And the idea is to leave the furthest person open, but that's a breakdown drill too. We start one, two, three, four. So it's just teaching, and everyone does every single spot. I mean, the post players are going to guard the ball coming down the court too. The perimeter players are going to be in the backcourt with one of the posts in the paint so they can figure out how to rotate up. That's something that's unique too. You've got to know how it all fits together. You can't just know your own siloed responsibility because you have responsibilities in rotation to cover anyone you get stuck on. So we'll do that where you're starting probably not the usual spot that you might start in just to get to know the system and how it works and how it all pieces together.
A couple times now you've mentioned the trapping triggers for trapping. What are they?
You're making me give all my secrets away.
That's not all of them, just whatever ones you want to.
No, it's all right. My husband Derek's always like, why do you do these clinics? And I was like, you know, it takes us like a good solid year. Yeah, well, we have some rules. We're going to try to get turns. That's kind of the staple. So when you can see that, you can see the back of someone's head and they're going to turn into an opportunity and you're up the line on the line and you can be there to trap on the turn. That's big. And it goes into depth of different sections on the floor, how that looks. We've got kind of a red, green, and yellow section on the floor. And that's a lot of detail. When you're so close, you can guard two. That's kind of a rule. And that might not be like a dead on trap, but it might be, I call it gobble in the gaps. So if you're in the gap and you're playing big and wide and someone's coming at your gap, if you can kind of get your fingertips on it, not a chest stop because that's an easy draw kick, but if you can kind of get your fingertips on it and getting that gobble opportunity, you can gobble up the ball, but you can also recover to your man if they were to pass it to your man, because again, they're so close, you can guard two. And then so close you're going to, we'll trap off a lot of ball screens. If they're going to bring a second defender to the ball, we're going to use that to our advantage and try to trap them and rotate out of it. And then if your man's behind the line of the ball, you can trap. And it might be a soft trap until your man gets into scoring range. It might be a hard trap, like on a down pass or a pass up the court and your man's throwing it in. So those are some of the rules to trapping. But again, it's practice and it's a feel and you've got to do it often. And but I think the unique one for us is at least the turns. And then, yeah, we'll trap some ball screens often too.
This goes back to that mentality question. For a lot of my players, at least, one of the hardest or one of the most different from what they grew up with is the idea of five people guarding the basketball. Mm-hmm. They think usually like I'm responsible, especially if they're in help.
Yeah,
that's not really my man until he gets to the rim. Then I better have been in help position. Do you feel like you're able to kind of, there's an overemphasis on that just simply because of all the if-thens that you just said? If they're not paying attention to the ball and their teammate goes to trap and they didn't rotate up one, they're burnt.
Yeah, for sure. We are always saying you got to be ready, which ironically, that puts them into great help defensive position, mm-hmm. not because we're working on help side, but because we're working on when and where and how do I rotate. So we always, you know, if the ball's on the strong side and there's three people on the strong side offensively, we want to always play 5-on-3. So we call it on the weak side, kind of a strong and a nail. We want to be on that strong kind of towards the strong side block and the nail and that help side I formation. And play 5-on-3 because you got to be ready to trap. And what's going to be easier for you is if you cut down your distance to rotate. Well, if you're snugged up on your man and the ball is being trapped and you have to rotate one over, bump a level off, and you're not off to the ball, up the line, on the line, you're going to have a hard time getting there. And that's when we have a great trap and everyone's like, oh, but we missed the rotation. Mm-hmm. And that's where you kind of let your teammates down. So in order not to do that, you're always ready to be towards the ball. Head on a swivel, obviously knowing where your man is, but the system kind of allows for that loaded mentality defensively.
I've got some one-off questions, some that you've briefly mentioned, but if you want to go into detail, you can. I'm guessing the blitzing of the ball screen kind of just stays in line with everything else, kind of fits with what you do everywhere else. Is there any time you don't do that? And with the idea that a lot of my listeners are high school teams, would you suggest we always do that?
Probably depends on your personnel, especially how mobile your posts are. If your post is having a hard time on that hedge trap and they're just going around, then it'll be hard to trap a ball screen. If your posts are pretty mobile and can stop them from turning the corner and send them back to your guard, it's going to be a lot easier to trap the ball screen. So sometimes we have to make an adjustment, especially depending on who our personnel is on the time. We've got some pretty mobile posts, but we've had to, you know, make an adjustment of maybe it's a quick hard hedge and you trap for like a 1 second count. And then you're going back to recover to your man, especially if they're a non-shooter. We've made some adjustments with, you know, ice. We've iced the ball screens on the side sometimes if they're beating us. So we always have a secondary or third ball screen coverage that we can go to if the trapping is just hurting you. But, you know, we did that a little bit more this year with some different ball screens depending on the team and the personnel that we played, but we were pretty convicted to it at Drury. It was like all we did was either switch or trap. I think it's unless you're playing like just a really good point guard in high school, trapping's tough for those players because I think defense kind of neutralizes some of those offensive players. And so to get in a trap and load and take away one pass, I think from a high school perspective, again, if you're not playing a point guard that can water bug their way through a trap or split traps easily, then that's going to work to your advantage when you're just applying pressure on the basketball. And a lot of good things will happen because those turnovers, again, allows for open court situations and advantage situations.
Are you doubling the post?
We are. Same type of mentality, the turn mentality. So when the ball enters the post, we're always trying to look to dig or turn. If you see, you know, if they're spinning one way and you see the back, the weak side's ready to be there on turns. So, and we'll mix it up a little bit. You know, I think we're not going to say every time we're going to double the post. I mean, if they catch and they do a little sigma move and face up, they can see and they're looking on the weak side. You've got to be ready to do both well, have a help side presence, but get out to a skip on a shooter. So it's a feel thing that we just work through practices, and we're not saying one way or the other, but it's definitely something in our arsenal for sure.
I would have to imagine your team's probably a little bit better than the average team at rotating out of post doubles just because you practice rotating everywhere else on the floor.
Yeah, definitely. You have to. And angles on the rotations and where we want to send them if the ball's kicked out and how we want to keep them on a side and not be playing this closeout basketball because they're in skips. So yeah, I think it just naturally fits with what we do. So we use that to our advantage.
What have you seen this style do to offenses you're playing? I would assume that it speeds them up. Do they try to run more ball screens, or are they trying to space you more, or what does it do? Because I'm sure you watch a team and you're like, they play like this way normally, but we're most likely going to have to face this because they're trying to neutralize the way we play.
Yeah, it's funny. You'll see a team completely get out of what they're doing like 80% of the time. And we'll practice it. Like we'll practice some, like if they're running spread pick and roll or a Euro or some two-man game stuff, we're going to really practice how we want to rotate in our trapping defense, on-ball defense. We might see two like on-ball screens the whole game because we've kind of blown that part of what they do up. If we know a team is pretty set heavy, we're going to deny any sort of first pass. So if they call, you're coming down, they're yelling twirl or thumbs up or chest pat, whatever it may be, we're going to deny hard that first entry. So you'll see a team's just get out of whack with their sets. Or if they're running some sort of continuity, we're going to probably blow that up. You know, we face teams that we scout and this is what they do. This is their bread and butter. And then we don't see it against us. It's a lot of kind of just spread you out and try to play some one-on-one basketball, try to make something happen and make a play instead of running a play. So we've seen that a lot, but it's fun when you can get a team out of what they're comfortable doing and out of their comfort zone. And they're running stuff, you know, a little bit unlike them and what you've seen. So I love that part, especially when you scouted a team and you're ready to blow up some things that they do, and then you barely see it because yeah, you do. You just get them out of whatever they're doing from an offensive standpoint.
You've talked about some of the buildup and whatnot. Once the season gets going, is it still a lot of 5-on-5 full court, or do you like to use smaller stuff, half court stuff? How do you rep that throughout the year?
We're still doing a lot in the half, but and I even kind of told this to my returners, I would like to play a little bit more out of it. I think when I took over the program at Grand Canyon, when I was at Drury, it was basically a well-oiled machine by, you know, when I left, it was year six. So now trying to implement the style and the system, you have to start kind of part, whole, part. I kind of believe in that theory. So when you do go to whole, but you see something that you can adjust real quick, you stop, time out, do a little skinny, focus on the drill and a half, and then get back into playing. Because I do think the more you play with 5-on-5 people on the court, the more natural the tendencies can become. When if you're just drilling it, of course you're going to get it right because that's the main focus of the drill. So how does the drill kind of translate to 5-on-5? is an emphasis. And I think we can even do a little better job of that now that we're starting to figure out exactly what the system is and how it looks like, just kind of like turn them loose and letting them play. And then if I see something, stopping and then doing the drill piece and then getting back to 5-on-5.
You maybe just answered it, but you're at the point now, I know, you know, year four is still pretty new for where mm-hmm. you're at, but are you at the point as a coach, having coached it longer than that, where you're like, I like what we do, I just need everyone doing it? Or is there anything that you'd eventually like to start doing differently?
From a defensive perspective, I'm pretty convicted to what we're doing. But even with personnel, we've kind of evolved into what's most beneficial for our team at the moment based on the makeup we have. We might have a team where, you know, we might not be able to trap every single ball screen. So we've got to make adjustments. Played a little bit of a matchup zone this year. That's new to me. We're like 99% man, but just kind of trying to mix it up and seeing how we can evolve. But I think the principles will always probably stick in terms of pressuring teams and getting them out of rhythm. I've just found that to be not only beneficial to our style, but also kind of a fun way to play. And recruits tend to like that because, you know, there's an opportunity there to get really better as a basketball player because of a defensive focus, but also get in and contribute right away and have that opportunity.
I'm sure people will want to look into this a little bit more. Where would you direct them?
Well, I've always said I'm available. That's something that I love talking shop basketball wise. Give me a few weeks here in the spring to let recruiting kind of settle down. But you know, I think for me, we have some practice film and some drills, and that's something I'm always willing to share. So I think we grow this game together. So I've always been one that's available to pick up the phone, answer emails and talk. And then even my assistants at this point know the system. And actually our Dobo, Deja Bernard, played for me at Drury, the best defender I've ever coached. So she's actually working for me. She was an All-American every year, Defensive Player of the Year. So she is one too that I said, hey, you know, get out there and talk some basketball with these coaches would be good for her. But then she's got the secrets and the recipe to success. So she's able to share that knowledge too. So willing and available for anyone that wants to reach out.
Has a championship production video as well that yes. probably shows some of this. And so I'll be sure to link that down in the description so people can check that out as well.
Yeah.
That's Coach Molly Miller, head women's coach at Grand Canyon University. Coach, I really appreciate you making some time amidst the phone calls to come on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, and happy basketball trails, everyone.